Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
This is Talk of the Devils, the Athletics podcast dedicated to Manchester United. We've got a full house on the podcast today of Laurie Whitwell, Carl Anker and Andy Mitten to react to that result on Saturday, the absolute debacle at Brentford. We previewed it on the last pod of last week, of course. I think after Brighton, a few of us feared the worst, but that was even worse than our worst fears, to be fair. Carl, I'll come to you first. Of course, we've got a lot to get through on the podcast, lots of interesting detail, lots of articles to discuss as well after the weekend. But you were there. How bad was it, in your opinion?
Atrocious, in a word. If we can get through this podcast without getting angry enough and swear, I think we all deserve a shiny penny. That was horrid. I have watched Manchester United beat Southampton 9-0. I have watched Southampton lose 9-0 to Leicester City. There was genuinely a point towards the end of the first half where I could feel the weight of the shirt on my back and go, this is how a team plays when they're about to lose 9-0. And it genuinely felt that Brentford almost spared Manchester United's blushes past the hour mark, where they essentially started making substitutes and decided it's not worth running in 34 degree heat to inflict further punishment on United. They were abject, devoid of confidence. What game plan they had, they executed incredibly poorly. And there were genuine points in time where they seemed completely unable to get the ball past the halfway line. This is horrendous and bad in a way that I think the concerning thing is it's going to be this bad for a while. I did not get the sense that that could be fixed within a week of training time, not least when you have to play against Liverpool next Monday.
No, I don't think there's any doubt that there's no quick fix to it, certainly. Andy, you've watched United for a long time. I think that's the worst half of football I've ever seen the team produce. What do you think?
I'm not going to argue strongly against that. I think four goals in 25 minutes, it's just bizarre watching it.
Brentford as well.
Brentford.
It's not Barcelona, is it?
I've seen some horrific scorelines. I've seen United 4-0 down at Forest in 1990, but there was always other reasons there. That was a dead rubber at the end of the season. It didn't really matter. I've seen the 6-1 against City, slightly freakish scoreline, but becoming a little bit bored with hearing people saying, "I've never seen it as bad as this." That happened several times last season. We're speaking to fans at the matches saying, "I've been a fan for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years and I've never known it as bad as this." It keeps on happening. It's horrendous. We could look for the worst descriptive words we can find, and I'm sure people listening to this will have their own. That first half was absolutely horrendous and really worrying. Really, really worrying. Because I've got no magical answers here where I can say, well, we were missing him and we were missing that, or I'm just really worried.
I mean, I think the headline, Laurie, is the fact that we're recording this at a time when Manchester United are bottom of the Premier League. I mean, there's not really a stat. There's lots of stats, actually, and we'll probably talk about a few of them, but there's not really a single fact that sums it up more than that.
It is remarkable. Manchester United bottom of the Premier League.
It's only two games, but my God, two games from hell, yeah?
Well, that's it. They're obviously the worst performing team in the Premier League right now. It's a fact. You know, the table, you know, it can lie occasionally, but this is telling the truth. You know, you look at those two games, very little to take encouragement from. You were saying about the 6-1, Andy. You know, your sort of mind flicks back to the 5-0 against Newcastle in 96 or the 5-0 against Chelsea in 99, and they were bad, but they also came in periods where United were actually successful, and you could see how it was an aberration on the day. This was absolutely where United are at. You know, you just tot them up. you know, Watford last season, Leicester, Liverpool twice, Man City, Brighton, now Brentford, four goals or more put past United, as Ian had from that guy that was saying, I'm a fan of the team that beat you by four goals last season. You couldn't figure it out, could you? You went through a few. Add Brentford to the list now if anyone comes up to you with that question. I mean, this is where United are at.
Next, mate, it's going to be impossible to answer. Yeah.
But I mean, that's the thing. You know, it could have been worse, as Carl says. It seemed like Brentford eased up. And the things that were going wrong were things that have gone wrong before and that you could well see going wrong again. You know, the playing out from the back was just incredible to watch. And Ten Hag said, you know, we wanted De Gea to go long, like we've seen Edison do, like we've seen Alisson do, when, you know, you invite the kind of opposition onto you and then you actually ping it over them. De Gea then was just kind of going into Eriksen and, you know, inviting, rolling out the red carpet for Brentford to press and win the ball back. It literally in United's box. It was incredible. But I could easily see that happen again, because I've seen it before where United, for some reason, De Gea, the defenders, set up and it's almost like they've got, okay, this is our routine, and they wait until the opposition are ready to then pass out. It's remarkable. I don't get it. So anyway, yeah, really despondent. I mean, it became laughable, didn't it? I was watching it with my friends. I know Carl was at the ground, so I had sort of gallows humour amongst us as we were, you know, it was nice sunshine. That was the only good thing about the day, because, you know, watching it unfold, it was comically bad. You know, you're kind of thinking, you know, it could be anything here. And, you know, I think fortunately Brentford took the foot off the pedal.
I was working at Manchester City on Saturday, so I'd watched them blink and dismantle Bournemouth 5-0. I was stuck in traffic trying to get out of the car park, and it was about 36 degrees. The aircon hadn't quite kicked in the car, so I was absolutely sweating. There was loads of people pushing in front of me, and I was watching United on my phone. I can't think of a moment where I've ever felt more angry watching football, and that was a lot to do with the temperature and the conditions, but also...
I hope you didn't drive straight away, Ian. Hope you calmed down a bit before you set off.
No, I didn't calm down at all. I drove very angry home and then watched the rest of it when I got back. Historic, Andy, in terms of it being the first time that Brentford had beaten Manchester United since the 30s. Historic because it was the first time United have had seven away defeats since the 30s as well. The worst start for a Manchester United manager in a century. I said before that the stats tell the story. But we've said there about whether things will change or not and how things change. There's an interesting article from Ahmed Walid on The Athletic about the bad decisions, poor passes and repeat mistakes, as the headline puts it, on The Athletic at the minute. Erik ten Hag deserves his share of some of the blame, doesn't he? Because the way that he asked his team to play against Brentford, considering they had a 3 week building up to that, I think they spent 3 days just working on their preparation for that match in particular, and some of the things that he asked his players to do and some of the selections that he made means that he has to take his share of the blame, despite him saying after the match it was just about mistakes.
Of course he does. He's the manager. You mentioned stats. We're speaking each month with new unfortunate stats. I won't repeat the ones that you've just said then, but there were actually some around the game at the weekend which shows how misleading statistics can be. United actually had more shots on target, more shots than Brentford, not on target. Created more chances, more crosses. So that just shows how misleading statistics can be. Yeah, possession completely. With Ten Hag, again, I was speaking to somebody who works at a very, very high level in terms of football tactics during the match. Again, that person was saying to me, Brentford are doing exactly what Brighton did. This is really, really worrying. This is not the Dutch league. I'm getting very specific about what Brentford are doing and saying if Ten Hag doesn't learn very quickly here, this season is going to turn into a disaster because every single opponent in the league is capable of doing this to Manchester United. Brentford and Brighton probably won't be winning the league this year. And it's just really, I keep using the word worrying because it is. With Ten Hag, he's an intelligent man. He's a very good coach. Can actually see what he's trying to do, but if it's not working, it's not working. And this cannot carry on. United cannot be losing matches like this because pretty quickly fans are going to lose faith in the manager. I think at the moment, he's got a free hit. He's a new manager. He'll be supported, but he's got to get some wins on the board. There's got to be some sign of of progress. And at the moment, we've only seen that pre-season and not when the actual season has started.
I think what the concern for Ten Hag is, and the difficult situation for everyone involved in Manchester United, is Ten Hag very clearly has a plan of what he wants to do. He very clearly does not have all the necessary tools to do it. So you get to a situation where, do you apply the handbrake if you're Ten Hag and try and do something a bit more pragmatic, a bit less highfalutin? Or do you continue to persist with what you need to do? Because, I mean, eventually Manchester United need to decide on what style of football they want to play. And one of the reasons why you get Ten Hag is because he's going to show you, we're going to play possession-based football. Ten Hag can't play possession-based football with some of these players. Some of these players are fundamentally ill-equipped to do that. And while he has to take some blame for how United set up, if you watch the match of the day, I think it was Jonathan Pearce went, you can't legislate for what David De Gea did for that first goal. You also, the second goal is something that they were warned at least three times by Brentford, by what Brentford were going to do. So there are some things where you're going, that is unwise. I think Erik ten Hag making Christian Eriksen the deepest midfielder so he can pick up the ball and progress it is a sensible tactical decision. Erik ten Hag doing it against a Brentford team that have just spent the last 6 months playing with Christian Eriksen, I know exactly what Christian Eriksen likes to do when he receives the ball with his back to goal, is a little bit unwise. And there were two or three moments in particular when Eriksen came drop deep to try and receive the ball. And there was a Brentford player going, he likes to pass right with his back to goal. I'm just going to stand in this gap. And that's where that second goal comes from. Can you legislate against that? Not really, because who else? Who is your midfield that you can put there? Fred's not particularly well suited to that position. Scott McTominay's not particularly good to that position. James Garner's been injured for a bit. Maybe you can play. Maybe you should have played him there. But if you put the best person to do that very important job, you have to play Christian Eriksen, to which you probably need to coach De Gea, your fullback, your centre-back, saying Brentford are probably going to be on this guy like a hawk, close down the space and do that. Are those players going to remember that in 34-degree heat where they've already conceded an accidental goal? You don't know. And that's the worrying thing. That's the thing. I don't know how these things get better, because some of these players are... Four players have featured in United's 4-0 defeat to Everton in 2019, United's 4-0 defeat against Brighton earlier this year, and now this 4-0 defeat against Brentford. Four players have featured in all those games. And you consider after that 4-0 defeat against Everton, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and other people around said, some of these players won't be here for too long. And you've still got four players who featured in that. Something's got to give. And I'm doing hand motions and I'm so confused.
I could see it on your face, to be fair, Cal. I know the listeners can't, but I'm sure they've got a mental picture now. Before we go any further, let's hear from Erik ten Hag, I think. And this is what he put the result at the weekend and that start as well down to exactly.
The team has to take the responsibility. I feel really sorry for the fans. They did everything to support us, but we let them down. Just they are good players. And what I asked them to do is play with belief and take responsibility for your performance. And that is what we didn't do. But belief you have to bring on the pitch for yourself and as a team. Don't get me wrong, the manager is responsible as well. He's the main responsibility, so, and I take that. And I will work on that. And of course, I have to give them belief, but also they have to give it by themselves. He's a great goalkeeper. But first goal, he know that, and that's clear. But then still, that is what I mean. You have to stick to the plan and move on. Mistakes as part of football. So you have to keep going, play as a team, and especially act. We are, as a team, in a difficult process. Of course, you expect a different start. It's not what we expected. We did quite well. It seems like what happens in the past, last season, we bring it into the season, we have to change that really quickly. In Man United, we have to serve higher standards than what we act today.
Laurie, what did you make of what you had to say?
I kind of don't think he could have said anything else, and I kind of agree with a lot of what he was saying, because, you know, individual mistakes, and then also the fact that he's clearly tried to instill a certain way of playing into them. We saw it on tour. You know, we spoke positively about the effect that he was having, interrupting sessions when they weren't going to plan. I know, yeah. We're smirking now, aren't we?
Remember
yeah.
that.
Do you remember when we get carried away? 4-0 oh, win to 4-0 defeat in a few weeks.
It's like last season when we listened back to those clips from the Ronaldo return podcast. Never mind.
So I can understand he must be thinking, wow, you know, already they've reverted to type, I suppose. How much you can say is his responsibility sort of two games into a reign when he's had weeks to prepare over season and the new signings, you know, okay, Lisandro Martinez is his, so that's on him for sure. Tyro Malacia and then Christian Eriksen, free transfer. So it's not like he's been, you know, reinforced sufficiently so that he can change the team and kind of say, this is how I want you to play. And actually, there's some jeopardy to your place. I mean, Carl mentioned the players that were, you know, playing in that Everton game. You know, you still got Anthony Martial that was, I think, on the bench in that game that's at the club. And, you know, we talk about how his injury has kind of derailed things. I mean, United should not be pinning all their hopes on Anthony Martial, for sure. We can get on to what Ronaldo's influence has been on this performance as well in later on. But I think that is a crucial point to make at this juncture where Ten Hag's talking about the team that he wants to put out there and the effort that he wants. And just on De Gea, we did a piece on, I think Friday it was, Dan Sheldon and I, looking at the fact that United have actually changed the scope of who they want as a goalkeeper. You know, that you saw Dean Henderson save a penalty for Forest and loving life at the City Ground at the weekend. Quite a contrast. He obviously came out with some strong stuff previously. And we're told that that actually had an influence in what Erik ten Hag, you know, gave him a fuller appreciation, I suppose, is perhaps the way of phrasing it, of that goalkeeping situation. The fact that Dean Henderson saw himself as a number one, but Ten Hag perhaps wasn't fully abreast of all the details. Now, United might push back against that, but it also is the case that they have actually raised the budget for a goalkeeper that can come in now, because I think Ten Hag is looking at that situation thinking, I need some pressure on David De Gea. Tom Heaton, great guy, good Premier League shot stopper, but he's played at Burnley for 6 years. He's not going to be able to play out in the way that Ten Hag wants. So it kind of speaks to, and again, we'll perhaps touch on recruitment a bit later, but it's all intertangled, the muddled thinking, and that's how you get a performance like that at Brentford.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Let's hear from David De Gea then. He obviously came out after the match to hold his hands up. I'm sure most people have heard this, but if you haven't, this is what he had to say about taking responsibility for that defeat.
Of course, it's just to take my responsibility today. I think I cost 3 points to my team today, to be honest. It was a poor performance from myself. Of course, then after the first mistake and the second, it was very tough for the team to keep playing and... Yeah, it was a horrible day. I think so. That cannot happen, to be honest, in professional football. Mistake like I made. Of course, we should react better, but the moment that we are living now is tough every time we concede a goal. So I should have saved the first shot, and probably the result will be different. Maybe I have to read the game better and kick it long. And I try to play maybe when I shouldn't play to Christian. But of course, we always try to play, we always try to have the ball, but sometimes, like today, they press one against one to the whole pitch, so I should read better today. Of course, we are not like now, like other teams. They concede one goal and then they win 5-1 or 6-1. So it doesn't matter if they made a mistake. This is why I think I cost today 3 points, because it was an easy save and it was 1-0 for them. And I feel it already. The team was going down. And of course, like I said, we have to react much better and be capable of score goals at least. And it was a poor performance.
Have you any idea how you turn this round?
I'm not sure, to be honest. I just think teams are improving a lot. Everyone, it looks like we are nearly in the same page. But to be honest, it was a good, like you say, good pre-season, but it's not enough. We have to show in the Premier League games when is the games that matter. So we always say the same, but stick together, work even harder than we are working, try to learn as quick as possible what the manager wants, and just play for this badge, play for the club, as put our lives on our games.
Andy, did you take any encouragement from David De Gea choosing to come out and speak so candidly about what happened?
I'm glad that De Gea's now coming out and speaking. He's been doing that for a season now. He took his time to do that. And as a very senior player, he should be doing that more. I liked his honesty. I'm sick of hearing we must do better. We go again. The time for that has gone, but players speak after the match to the rights holders. They're contractually obliged to do it. And I think that fans are still interested to hear what players are saying. I was interested after the game to listen.
I think explaining what he'd done wrong in the build-up especially was particularly revealing, I think.
I thought that Thomas Frank's comments about what he said were really, really interesting, because he said that they'd use similar tactics as Brighton, especially in United's build-up, which talks about what David is saying and attacking United's left side, especially with Lissandro and Luke Shaw, both had really poor games again. And if Erik ten Hag doesn't start adapting to this and getting more flexible, we're going to see the same mistakes being repeated. As Laurie touched on earlier, what else can they say? We're getting more honesty, which I think we appreciate, but also expect, because you can't come out after a 4-0 defeat and sugarcoat it.
I suppose not come out is the alternative for De Gea, is just sit in the dressing room and let someone else answer all the questions.
Well, good on him. And, you know, going over to the fans at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I mean, that was planned before the game. And the manager wanted the players to go over to the travelling fans, who sell out every single match. Tickets for Brentford on Saturday were so hard to get hold of. Right? And the fans are there every single match. Old Trafford is... Tickets for Old Trafford are really hard to get hold of at the moment. It's bizarre. It's like this ghoulish soap opera that people want to be more engaged with and not walking away from. It's bizarre, isn't it? Let me suffer more.
Ghoulish soap opera.
Give me more pain.
Wow. Yeah. Well, the way to do that is to play Liverpool at home, I think, isn't it? Right, we're going to talk about the reaction to that result and what happens next for United in just a minute. But before that, remember, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months. Go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod and sign up now to get full access to all our great writing and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcast as well. Despite Manchester United's problems, it's still worth reading about them, I promise, I think. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. Okay, right, let's get into the reaction. All of us have sort of tried to hold back in our assessment of Brentford to talk about what happens now, what comes next, what does Erik ten Hag do? Already we've had suggestions, Laurie, that he's made the players run and run and run. The difference, essentially, between what Manchester United ran and Brentford ran on Saturday. What else have we got?
Yeah, I mean, I find that a really interesting aspect. Old school, right? I mean,
very.
Got a progressive European coach and gets them in a kind of Tony Pulis style way, I would imagine, to make the point, I suppose, that if you don't at least work as hard as your opposition, you're not going to have a chance. And that was, you know, you can go back to Alex Ferguson. That was a key pillar of his sort of theory, I think, about football. So I don't mind it. He's never going to be as strong as he is now, even after two defeats. I think he feels like he has to draw a line in the sand on it and get them in. Cancel a day off, you're in, and you're going to do that running that you didn't do the day before. Now, you might talk to sports scientists, and we did do, and kind of gauge their thoughts on whether that was a sensible move to do in terms of injuries. But again, we'll see. The proof is in the pudding. You know, United would say that they allowed a couple of players that I think were carrying stuff. You know, they didn't have to do it. It was done in that kind of way, that a sensible way. But also, the point was made: if you're not going to run against Brentford, and they all did it individually, that 13.8k, it wasn't a collective thing. We were kind of wondering whether it would be a collective thing, but Cristiano Ronaldo did it. But yeah, it's now up to Ten Hag. He's clearly thinking, I need to get the shock factor in already, which I guess is kind of alarming. But at the same time, you've just lost 4-0 to Brentford. If he was letting them have the day off, like, you know, we criticised Ralf Rangnick for, criticised Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for after bad defeats, you know, having lengthy periods of time off. So at least that's a rebuttal to that. But as far as we're aware, the Ronaldo thing is a big issue. I think now they are viewing that as the main topic to address. You know, the pre-season went well. He wasn't there. It looked like they were working in unison, looked like they were doing that high press. Clearly, that hasn't happened against Brentford. You know, is that because Cristiano Ronaldo, as we're told, in training, pushes back against the pressing instructions that are given, sort of flaps his arms, and is also keeping himself to himself when it comes to eating lunch in the canteen? He clearly ultimately wants to leave the club, but United don't want to sell him, you know, unless something happens dramatically now in into the transfer window. But is that a decision to now make and kind of consider more fully now that Ten Hag has got a full appreciation of what it's like to have Cristiano Ronaldo around the place when he does want to leave? You know, people might say that Cristiano Ronaldo has scored all these goals last season. How on earth could you say that he's the problem? But, you know, clearly this is now sort of two managers in a row, maybe even three if you count Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who have had issues sort of having harmony in the squad with him there. So I don't know if we want to talk more about that specifically, but that kind of feels like one of the main aspects that Ten Hag has got to deal with. And then, you know, we can talk about recruitment and, you know, who United can actually bring in to make this a different matter, because, you know, we're still talking about Fred and McTominay. Christian Eriksen played the deeper role, but it's not very many options that he's got to change things, really.
Yeah, something has to give, doesn't it? Certainly. There's lots of detail in Adam Crafton's piece on The Athletic, Manchester United Fallout. It's headlined. Go and have a read of that if you want to know more about the situation with Ronaldo in the squad and the harmony around that. And of course, all the different bits and bobs that Erik ten Hag's working on now to try and turn things around. A source in that piece, Carl, said that Ten Hag's trying to build an aeroplane as he flies. It's a very interesting take on exactly what's happening at United at the minute, but aeroplanes have been built in the past and they'll be built again, and he's got to build one.
Yeah, indeed. I think Brendan Rodgers used a similar phrase a season ago about football management is like trying to land the plane while building at the same time. So, yeah, they're all into aerial activities. The concerning thing about it all is, why is it taking to this point? You know, there was a point just before kickoff, where I was watching the training drills before kickoff and whatnot, and I was like, oh, look, Manchester United seem to be using smaller rondos than they did previously on the Solskjaer. And there was a little moment where Brentford did a little sprint, and I went to Jay Harris and went, oh, that's quick. And he sort of looked at me quite confused. And I had a moment going, oh, I'm so used to watching Manchester United play that the intensity of which Brentford players sprint is now alarming to me. And this is the difficulty. You can make Manchester United players run harder and you can make them run loads, but I don't think that is going to address weaknesses. You know, making David De Gea run 13 kilometres is not going to make him a better sweeper keeper. Making someone like Fred or Scott McTominay run an extra 13 kilometres on Saturday isn't necessarily going to make them better at escaping someone else's cover shadow when they're trying to receive the ball. Making Harry Maguire run an extra 13 kilometres is not going to make him understand that he shouldn't necessarily be dribbling with the ball on the outside of his right foot. It's not going to teach Marcus Rashford, you have to start running in behind more. That's what you're really good at. Stop trying to cut inside and run into triple teams. Like, you can understand from a discipline point why you got run 13 kilometres, but the other issues and the other weaknesses of this team don't necessarily get addressed by the fact you just run an extra 13 kilometres a day afterwards.
Or could it be that they're just not good enough? You know, I tweeted on Saturday that Jose Mourinho and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer worked a miracle to get this group of players to second in the league. I know there's loads of mitigating circumstances.
I don't think so. They're not the same players. And I think this is also needs to be crucial, right? That, you know, the David De Gea of 17-18, that put in one of the best individual goalkeeping performances I've ever seen across the season, that's not this David De Gea anymore. This David De Gea now has eaten so many punches. He is, a lot of the league knows if you shoot early before he gets his feet set, it might wriggle under him. A lot of the league now knows if you stand next to him in terms of corner kicks, he's going to have problems being out of the press. This is not the same David De Gea that was the good David De Gea that finished second under Mourinho. This is not the same Marcus Rashford that was the good Marcus Rashford that helped Manchester United finish second, right? He's had way more injuries. His confidence is low. He's done this. This is not the same Harry Maguire that Manchester United fans were going, oh God, we need Harry Maguire for the Europa League final. His confidence is rock bottom. He's doing things that Harry Maguire very clearly doesn't seem to be enjoying playing right centre back. And two, he looks broken. He looks as if he reads all the things people say about him on the internet and he's beginning to internalise them. And I don't know how you fix that.
So I'd say credit to those managers who did get them playing at the levels that they were at and somehow get United up to second position, because it seems so far away now. Even at the start of last year, clinging to this now, Manchester United were top of the Premier League in January last year. It's mad, isn't it? I think Ten Hag has got to be finding solutions in his own mind. That's what Louis van Gaal had to do. So he also had a wonderful pre-season, won 6 or 7 straight matches. Then he lost his opening league game. Then there was that hammering against MK Dons, do a couple of disappointing draws away at Burnley and Sunderland. And then there was a game at Leicester, and his whole philosophy changed on that because United lost 5-3, having been in a winning position. And he just had to change everything because he thought, I don't know whether he's thinking we're going down, but I was speaking to people close to him at the time, and it's like, we have to settle on a system which is going to work for Manchester United. And to be fair, it did.
Like Rooney, Van Persie, Falcao and Di Maria all in that starting line. With the midfield diamond. We're all very excited at the
same time. Yeah, I mean, that first half at Leicester was one of the greatest first half.
That chip from Di Maria. Amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah. The second half, we're probably best not talking about that. Because if he doesn't, then he's going to start being mocked as being like a more polished version of De Boer, who was mocked when he came to England. And Liverpool is daunting, but Jose and Ole, they did go into those games, they'd grind out the 0-0 draws against Liverpool. They had a system, and I don't know what Erik ten Hag's system is going to be, but he needs to have an adaptable system, because we started this part of the chat by saying a lot of the players are not good enough, and I have doubts about a lot of the players, I really do, in terms of the technical ability in key positions. Which nowhere near corresponds with their actual salaries and status. And people keep saying how many United players would get in the best Premier League 11 or whatever, and it's really shocking, isn't it? I've not been into fantasy football for about 30 years since I ran a league at school, but I got coerced into joining a league this year. And regretting putting any Manchester United players into it straight away. You can just see that others are just pulling well away from it. I won't talk any more about fantasy league football because I know nothing about it. it's really, really worrying. And again, I can't see the way out of it. If you're going to ask me to predict the Liverpool score at Old Trafford, I wouldn't be surprised if they become another team to put another 4 goals past Manchester United. And the manager's got to work out his system somehow. He'll get players in. The 13 running 13 kilometres, then players are not going to want to do that again. So yes, it is old fashioned. Maybe it's a punishment where they think we don't want to do that again. I was in Salerno for the Athletic in April, watching a game with a player, Frederick Vaselli, who did a really good interview with us. And he was called in the next morning at 11:30 at night. And they had probably what Manchester United players had on Sunday. They turned the season around. They stayed up. Some good did come from that meeting. I still reckon on the sly, Scott McTominay buzzed off a 13K run because he would have been able to blitz everybody else and say, I am a champion. I've won at something.
I need that laugh. Thank you, mate.
Yeah. Thank you, Andy.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Laurie, can we just go back to a point that was in the article as well? If the issues are so severe now then with Ronaldo, What do you think Erik ten Hag's going to do? Does he drop him? Does he sell him? How does this get resolved?
Well, selling him, they need a club to come and make a bid, other than the Saudi Arabian club that was never going to work, because I think the primary motivation for Ronaldo is Champions League, you know, either winning it or scoring some more goals in it so that he overtakes Lionel Messi in the group stage tally. He's three behind at the moment, and make sure that he extends his record at the top of the overall scoring charts. So there's that, you know, do they come to a point? I mean, United rejected this story yesterday that went out there. Do they come to a point where they think, is it beneficial to actually, you know, come to some kind of agreement and let him go on a free, you know, and let him, which sounds crazy because, again, he scored so many goals last season. How are you going to let that guy go for free? But you've got to think about the collateral, I suppose. Does he drop him? You know, Anthony Martial, that's the one sort of light, I suppose, in that piece, which is crazy again that we're sort of talking about Martial in this way because, you know, we've had managers before him.
The one who was on loan at Sevilla.
Exactly.
Second half of last season.
Exactly. But Ten Hag might look at that and think, at least that's someone that I can put in at centre forward that has done well for me on pre-season tour, that will do what I ask so far to his mind. So at least that's a change he can make. And that will be really interesting. I mean, if he drops Ronaldo for Liverpool to bring in Anthony Martial, he's really put his flag in the ground there, hasn't he? And said, this is how I'm going to proceed. But he's done it with the running already. So he's shown sort of strength in that way. And I do admire that. You have to admire that. You know, it might not all go correct, but at least he's making decisions and being decisive with it. He is trying things to adapt to the players that he's got at his disposal. But you go back to it, the recruitment. And, you know, Erik ten Hag was in the building. Basically, they knew he was getting the job in April, didn't they? You know, he was actually in at Old Trafford in May. How have we got to this point where the season has started, two defeats in, and the three signings that they've got, you know, are a left-back, a centre-back, and a free transfer, you know, and ultimately, you look at the people that are making the decisions, and I don't know if we'll touch on the Glazers, because clearly that is now also a big topic. We should, I think.
We should.
That is a major topic, and again, the protests, you know, we think are going to happen ahead of the Liverpool game. But they've been in charge for so many years now and they've put people in place that, to my mind, aren't delivering the goods right now. You know, we look at John Murtagh, who's the football director. He's appointed Erik ten Hag. It's on him now. You know, this kind of stuff can't just be the manager, can't just be the players. You can criticise them, absolutely, but they are scrutinised every week and they might ultimately get sold or lose their jobs if they're not performing. John Murtagh has put Erik ten Hag in place and the recruitment team, you know, in terms of Steve Brown, the head of recruitment, where are their suggestions? Where are their signings that they're making to help Erik ten Hag along the way? These are questions for them now. And they're big questions because you look at how bad it's got. It needs proper solutions to it.
Andy?
Carl?
Yeah, yeah, I totally agree. I totally agree, Laurie. This is a very, post-Fergie Manchester United style way of thinking of, we've got Erik ten Hag, we've got a really smart manager, and then he's left him to it. We've not put any thought into what he's good at. Ten Hag, you talk to any sort of Dutch journalist or anyone that's expert in passing reference of Dutch football, will tell you ten Hag is a tracksuit manager. He's not great in press conferences. He's not necessarily great in terms of things that you'd say a manager does. He's more of a head coach. So what Manchester United should have been doing since April is furnishing the club with people that can allow Ten Hag to focus on the training methods. And they just haven't done that. If you look at how long Manchester City, and I'm loath to mention City on this podcast in this way, how long they put things in and around. So when Pep Guardiola came, it was just like a duck to water. They went off and made sure they got the correct chief executive. They made sure they've got the correct recruitment things. They got everything in place for Pep. And yeah, money, blah, 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 blah. But if you know Ten Hag is your guy in April, at the very least, you should get him like two or three more of his proper transfer targets before preseason starts, before tour starts. And you say, you know, there's the saying, you know, many hands make light work. Where are the hands? Who are the hands? How did these people get into these positions at Manchester United? And are they the best in the Premier League at what they do? And this is the problem right now. We've talked about the Andy Mitten standard of quality, top four and a trophy. Andy, do you think United can get that right now?
I'd bite your hands off right now for that. I really would. Because to finish in the top four, you've got to have two or three serious runs over a season. Mm-hmm. You've got to win a lot of football matches. You've got to beat good teams. A trophy, well, United have not won a trophy since 2017. Your point about April is a good one. To be fair to United, they have been trying, but it's not coming off. And who are the people? Well, John Murtagh has spent the whole summer travelling around, dealing with agents. United were definitely circumspect at the start of the transfer window that they were trying to, the agents were trying to rip them off big time. And I've seen some of the quoted figures that people have put towards Manchester United, and you just think they're taking the piss completely. Now, that might stand up in June, but at the end of August, when rival clubs have managed to bring players in, the argument holds less water. When United are increasingly linked to players who appear more random than who appear to have been in the scouting system. So you've got two problems there. United are struggling to get deals done. I spoke to someone in Holland on Friday who said, for example, Martinez, good player, not worth anything like that amount of money. And that's someone whose opinion I respect, who's been consistent with me over the years. And that's just his opinion. But that's someone, again, working at a very high level in football who knows his stuff. That person said to me years ago, tomorrow, a guy called Daley Blind will sign for Man United. He knows what's going on. And we see the manager going back to the players in the Dutch league who he's familiar with. Fine, managers do that, except it's not going to be fine if they don't work out. And it's not going to be fine if Manchester United don't bring in some of the key positions. I'm not going to say the word FDJ for the first time in this podcast, but he has been so central to Manchester United's planned recruitment this season that if it doesn't come off and if he was to go to another club, that is a failure. I said in last week's podcast, someone at Barcelona had said Manchester United have been very correct in their dealings with us. But 18 months ago, someone told me United don't need to be correct. They need to know the dark arts in football. Football is not a clean business. It's a dirty business. You've got to get the players in one way or another. And again, someone at Barca said to me last week, everyone's talking to everybody. You know, you've got to know what's going on. Players are talking all the time to their agents. And if the bottom line is that the players United are targeting don't come to the club, then that represents a failure.
One thing I get the sense of is essentially Manchester United, at some form of executive level, are afraid of looking embarrassed. Right. And when you say, oh, a club is taking the mick because they're quoting you a price, that's ridiculous. Sometimes you just got to take that to the face. Right. Sometimes, okay, this is overpay for a football player, but we really need him. We need to get the thing done. Do that and then work smarter next time. Or one thing that always really, really annoys me is when certain players get linked to Manchester United and they end up at Real Madrid. And the idea is, oh, well, you know, the person had their heart set on Spain. I'm like, okay, fine. The question next should be, what can Manchester United do to lessen that gap. And yeah, we know the weather in Manchester is not quite the weather in Spain. And if Andy can tell you all the great things about Manchester and all the really good social, like, why are we able to better articulate why a player should come to Manchester United than Manchester United staff? Why is Cheick Doucouré, a better defensive midfielder than Manchester United's current options, gone to Crystal Palace? Why did Boubacar Kamara go to Aston Villa when Manchester United were, oh, well, you know, player? Like, these are good players moving to Premier League clubs outside of the Champions League spots. You can't say, oh, you know, we haven't got Champions League football. When, look at all the other teams in the Premier League that are able to get better players for issues of need that Manchester United can't get.
What I think a big issue is the lack of decisiveness on targets. So this is why Erik ten Hag, and United might justifiably say, we've backed Erik ten Hag. These are the players that he's wanted. But it feels like it's too much that way. You know, did he do this at Ajax? Was he so integral to the recruitment at Ajax that he was literally picking players? I don't think he was. So why do you give, you know, the hand over all the reins to this, you know, a new manager? Should it recruitment team that's been in place for a number of years, that's been scouting hundreds of players across the globe, not say, actually, here's some other players? And you mentioned a couple there, Carl, that you kind of wonder, okay, what could have happened there? United will say, we weren't in for that player. They weren't good enough for us. But when have they signed a player that has then gone, okay, that was a smart move, and I can see what they're doing there. We're probably still back to Bruno Fernandes, where it wasn't a cheap option, but at least he came in. People weren't necessarily sure about him, but he has delivered. I know we've questioned some aspects to his game overall, but you've got to say that's a pretty positive transfer. So that's why I'm curious as to this summer why it's come this way, where we're now into a situation as we had with Marko Arnautovic, where Ten Hag probably thinking, I need a guy in that can do a job for me, that's got character. You know, we can discuss the different indiscretions that he had where he got his ban for UEFA. But at the same time, Ten Hag thinks that this is a guy that won't lack for self-belief. So, and I know him from FT20, let's get him in. Where's the check and balance at United to say, actually, it's not a good idea for the football reasons and also for the wider reasons. And then ultimately they pull out once, you know, there's reaction, there's other people perhaps in there saying, actually, this isn't a good idea, and then they change their mind. So, you know, we're getting to Adrien Rabiot. I know you spoke about that last week, Carl. So it feels like a lot of this is put on Ten Hag, when I don't think it should be.
It's such a reactive club, though. And Laurie talks about things not getting done. I've been writing about the stadium development more than anybody for a decade now. And finally, under intense pressure, it was announced that they're going to do the stadium. The lack of a women's team was another thing which was criticised for years, and finally, United did it. The youth system, I wrote really strong stuff about that in 2015, and finally, extra money was put into it. It's not a club which is thinking, like, you mentioned Manchester City. I know from speaking to former managers and people who've been associated there, they're planning 2 or 3 years ahead. Manchester United are playing catch-up on 2 or 3 years behind all the time. And that's not good either.
All comes back to the same thing though, Andy, doesn't it? Laurie was critical of the ownership before. A lot of fans are getting more and more annoyed about this. And of course, Gary Neville is doing his bit. Sky, it seems, some of the other reporters are doing their bit to try and point the conversation and point the finger in the owner's direction. Is that fair to your mind? Do you agree with what's going on? Do you applaud what's going on, Andy?
Absolutely. I've been very consistent about the Glazer ownership of Manchester United. I put my own money into forming IMUSA as a supporters group a long, long time ago, and wasted hundreds of hours in fan politics when I was younger. Paid my own way down to Whitehall after the Glazer takeover to say, with other fans, to say this shouldn't be allowed to happen. An opinion I've not changed at all. And the British government were like, yeah, would you like some tea and coffee? There's a nice bourbon there, and we're completely powerless, but we will write a letter saying, just be careful. Chickens are coming home to roost. The ownership is a major problem at Manchester United. There's been loads of small wins for the fans, ticket prices, you know, support for away matches, allocations, but it's all played out under the cloud of the ownership, who didn't communicate with fans until the massive misstep of the European Super League. Fans have got no patience at all for the Glazers owning Manchester United. They would be really happy if they sold the club and walked away. And can you blame United fans for saying that? The Glazers have had 17 years to put their best practice into practice. And it's not working, it's failing.
We'll talk more about the owners on Thursday's podcast, no doubt, in the build-up to Liverpool. But we need to talk about this fella. I got my mindset. In fact, just cut it there, please, because I'm not in the mood to listen to George Harrison. Andy, have you got any interesting insight that there might be a rabbit being pulled out of a hat anywhere with Frenkie de Jong to cheer us all up?
I watched Frenkie de Jong play on Saturday night. He played really well to the point.
Not from the start, though.
Not from the start, which is what I said, did I not, 3 weeks ago? But he played really well to the point that some Catalan journalists were saying to me, why wasn't he playing this well last season or the season before? This is someone who looks like he wants a move here. Yeah. Just encourage that in your writing. I would love it if Frenkie de Jong signed for Manchester United because I think he's a brilliant player and he's miles better than the players who've been signed.
Is he going to sign? Is there any more encouragement?
I'd love to give you a positive answer here, mate, but I cannot say whether he's going to sign or not.
We're still waiting.
What I've said is it has happened. Barca are putting more and more pressure on him, fairly or unfairly. He wasn't selected for the game on Saturday. When Sergio Busquets was sent off, I thought, oh no, that means he's going to be banned. That means that Frenkie's going to start at the games and he's going to be a starring role. The reception when he came on was pretty warm. It wasn't ecstatic like it was when Ansu Fati came on. I just want this transfer window to end. I really do. I think my editors don't. Our editors don't, because it's absolutely fantastic for traffic. And I'm getting editors saying your stuff's getting more reads or more listens. I'm saying, yeah, end it. And end it with Manchester United having brought in more players and have got rid of the players who are surplus to requirements.
Okay, there's details on The Athletic at the minute about Ethan Laird, who's joined QPR on loan. Also, as well, James Garner, Manchester United being open to him leaving. Laurie, you've detailed that in David Ornstein's column on Monday. And there's stuff about strikers, Laurie, as well now, isn't there? It feels like United are going to push for this. It's incredible. We're sat here now, and on this podcast, we've talked about a second-choice goalkeeper to push David De Gea. I don't think we've mentioned right-back, but there's still sort of some concerns over that. Central midfield, maybe two of them. An attacker as well. There's 2 weeks left.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And that was kind of the premise of the piece that I think we did on Saturday. All the different names that are getting linked. Like, so once you have out there that you went for Marko Arnautovic, then that opens the floodgates for agents to go, well, if he's going to get considered, how about this guy?
What about this guy?
So United have been fielding various different inquiries from people and proposals. I kind of led off on three that were most eye-catching, I suppose, in terms of Alvaro Morata, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Mauro Icardi. I was told that Morata does have some substance. I think United are looking at that. He's scored goals in the Premier League. €35 million possible price. Maybe he'll go on loan because he likes a loan. But yeah, he comes with kind of baggage or kind of questions. You know, Maurizio Sarri said he was fragile, you know, mentally when he was at Chelsea. This is 4 years ago. So maybe he's changed, but equally it's something for United to consider. Aubameyang and Icardi, I'm sort of told no on those, but you never know. It's you know, 2 weeks left of the window. There is some panic in the air, but they are, you know, certainly Icardi's a character that if you bring him into the squad, wow, we're going to have some more stories. We're going to have some more clicks on the website, Andy. So I think United are probably guarded on over that justifiably. And I think Aubameyang and Chelsea, I think stuff could happen there. Tuchel had him at Dortmund, didn't he? And they did well together. So, but that's where we're at. You know, there's so many different names. I do still hear Jamie Vardy as someone that United admire. And I think actually he'd probably be the best of the lot. I know you're laughing at me again. I said this weeks ago.
No, I think you're right. I'm not laughing. You're right. Every time I see it come up, I think that's Laurie that.
I just think, listen, I've seen him. We talk about that 5-3 game under Louis van Gaal. I was there for that covering Leicester, and that was the Jamie Vardy game where he announced himself as a bloody pest.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's gone on from there. So, you know, I don't think it'll happen.
And a rascal's
I don't think Leicester,
haircut, wasn't it?
Exactly. I mean, where he gets his barbering, I'm not sure. I need to. I need to get down to that place, maybe.
It's not your guy who did the sides last week. No.
Yeah, maybe we need to sign his guy up.
All right, we've mentioned some names there. Aubameyang, Barca would sell if it got to like daft money because they didn't pay daft money for him. Your 40s or 50s. I think when Arnautovic was mentioned, every Spanish agent went, whoa there. I've got a player here. And half of them strikers, I've spoke to loads of them. They'd love to play in the Premier League for a club like Manchester United. Morata, brilliant story in Evra's autobiography where he sat behind him on a plane at Juventus and he starts crying because he's really into this film and it's really sad. And he's like, Alvaro, Alvaro, Alvaro. He said, but it's so sad. Have you seen it? And I think it shows the sensitive side of him. Morata's a good striker.
He's the best of the names mentioned.
Exactly. Griezmann, he'd cost a lot of money. It wouldn't surprise me if Manchester United pulled in somebody like him. It was put to me that Atletico Madrid are the club who've got the strikers who they need to sell. Gerard Moreno's a good striker at Villarreal. Unfortunately, we know that because of a game in Gdansk, which we're not going to talk about. But this is the level that we're talking about of the type of strikers who might come. I did see Raul de Tomas linked. He plays for Espanyol. I mean, he just scores wherever he goes. So there's no reason why that's going to stop because he's just a goal scorer. He just scores for fun. Has boots, will travel, will score goals. So I did wonder, okay, so this is why United have been in Barcelona for so long. It's Raul de Tomas. So. But I've got no evidence of, and I've not checked that one out either. I will do. One of us will do.
I'm going to give the final word to Carl on all this because his facial expressions whilst Andy and Laurie have been running down different transfer targets for Manchester United have been very, very entertaining. You're enjoying this, Carl, aren't you?
It's gallows humour, but it does very much feel like we're at the gallows. Something's wrong. Something's rotten in the state of Denmark, and I don't quite get it. And this could all just be on me not understanding what's going on entirely. But I am worried in a way I haven't been worried about Manchester United in a long time.
Well, that's a nice, cheery way to end the podcast. I expected you just to say something really quick about the facial expressions you'd made, but actually you've left me flatter than at any point during the course of the last hour or so that we've been recording this. Thank you, Carl. Brilliant.
No worries.
Right. So much United writing on The Athletic at the minute, as I'm sure you've guessed from this podcast. It's a good time to go and get a subscription. You can do that if you're a new subscriber for just £1 a month right now for the first 6 months. Just go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. But Laurie, thank you very much for being with us. Carl, thank you to you as well. And Andy, thank you too. And thank you for listening at home. We'll be back on Thursday to preview Liverpool and to talk about what other craziness has happened in Manchester United's world. There'll be more, I'm sure. See you then. Bye-bye.
The Athletic.